There's a shareholder agreement in place for the large shareholders here. It covers typical things. It covers standstill, covers transfer restrictions, buy-sell arrangements, ROFRs, ROFOs, that kind of stuff. There's also a provision that says certain key actions require supermajority vote requirements. So I'll get to the size of the board in a second, but 3 out of 5. And so the board is composed of 5 people. The founder CEO is one. Each of the VCs has a representative, and the other 2 are extras. Okay, so that's the basic fact pattern I want to talk about today, although we could range a little bit beyond this as well. So, Melissa, is this a conflict transaction that I've been describing to you, and why does it matter whether it is or isn't?
Sure. Well, I think it is a conflict transaction, you know, to start kind of in the sense that you've got a 25% stockholder whose, you know, interests are not aligned with the other stockholders because, you know, the stockholder is looking to do a buyout. But when you sort of step back, I think you sort of first have to ask, okay, but is that, you know, 25% stockholder a controller? And the control analysis, you know, is very important. But why the control analysis matters is because under Delaware law, generally speaking, stockholders don't owe other stockholders fiduciary duties. But where you have a controlling stockholder, one who, you know, possesses control over the company and exercises control over the corporate decision making, that stockholder takes on fiduciary duties to other stockholders. And from a litigation standpoint, that's very important because where you have a controller on both sides of a transaction, or you have a transaction or decision for the board where the controlling stockholder stands to get some benefit that's not shared by stockholders generally, that transaction, in the absence of some procedural protections that we'll talk about, that transaction is subject to entire fairness rather than the deferential, you know, business judgment review. You know, and that's pretty important, you know, consequence in terms of kind of litigation risk.
So does entire fairness, does that mean that if you're subject to entire fairness review, you lose?
No, but it means that you, the controller and the board, can bear the burden of showing that the transaction resulted from fair dealing and that minority stockholders got a fair price. And that tends to be kind of costly and drawn out litigation. So at the end of the day, you might well prevail, but you know, it's a big difference in terms of the way the litigation unfolds if you are subject to business judgment standard of review rather than entire fairness. So from there, you say, well, here, you know, how do we kind of analyze the control where you've got a VC fund that owns 25% of the company and has a board seat and has, you know, sent in a buyout letter, you know, looking to take out the other stockholders and has had discussions with another 25% stockholder about the, you know, possibility of rolling in that transaction. So you essentially have, you know, 50% of your stockholders who are going to be buyers rather than sellers in the transaction. And what Delaware law says is that where you have a majority stockholder, a stockholder who controls a majority of the voting power, that stockholder, you know, is a controller because they have the ability to elect majority of the board. When a stockholder has less than majority ownership, the control analysis is sort of whether the stockholder, you know, with the voting power and other indicia of control, you know, controls the business and affairs of the company through control and, you know, domination of the board. And that's a very fact-intensive inquiry. And the control can be transaction-specific, or you could have a controller, you know, who's a controller for all purposes. So here, you know, I'd first want to start with our 25%, you know, buyer and say, well, you look at the 25% holder alone, you know, is that stockholder a controller? And I'm going to assume here under our facts that we wouldn't have enough there for the 25%er alone. But when you look at the 25% holder, you know, teaming up with the other 25% holder, Delaware law, I think, would analyze those stockholders as a control group. It's not enough when you sort of do the control group analysis under Delaware law that you have 2 investors with parallel, you know, investment interests. That's not enough, and it is a pretty, I'd say, hard test to meet to be a control group. But where stockholders have, you know, a common goal, they're working together, and they have legally significant ties, you know, some sort of agreement or arrangement between them, Delaware will view them as a control group. So I think here we're starting with a situation where we've got a control group, you know, proposing a buyout transaction.
And so, your group standard is not the same as the 1934 Act, federal securities law.
It's a Delaware test, kind of facts and circumstances.
It's Delaware law, so we've got to follow Delaware law.
So, Luke, let me ask you, does this bring back any memories of Tesla and Elon Musk? When you, Luke, represented the special committee in that situation.
It does. And, you know, outside of the special committee engagement last year,